Welcome to The Rewind with Nikita and Jewel, where we will chop it up about movies, shows, games, and books we checked out in 2025. I'm Nikita.
And I'm Jewel.
So welcome, everyone. So check this out. It's been a while since we've done a rewind, and it's kind of exciting. Ooh, so much has been going on, and you get busy. And so many movies came out, so many books came out, so many games came out. And so we're going to break down what we watched and what was cool to us and what we liked about it. I'm going to let you go ahead and get it started, Jewel. I see you have The Institute with Stephen King. Totally fire. That was good, actually. I think it's an underestimated show. What do you think?
I think it is an underestimated show. I think you're absolutely right. We know that it's based on Stephen King's novel by the same name. And I think a lot of people haven't really tapped in to the episodic things that we're watching. So I hope whatever we do with The Rewind, we at least get people watching, letting them know what they like and what they don't like. Underestimated, completely fire, great actors. All of them played their role exactly to point. And I thought, I can't wait for another season. And that's how I knew it was a really dope show. How about you, Nikita?
Yeah, definitely, because the book was pretty cool. And then you watch how this is transposed into the screen. And at first I was like, oh, this kid, I don't know. You know what I mean? I remember thinking, I don't know if I'm going to dig this. He doesn't seem to be, the right character. But oh my God, as I started getting into it, he's perfect. Perfect, perfect character. You know, typical, very, very intellectual kid with the arrogance and knowing that he has this knowledge. The premise behind it is so dope that I was like, it followed suit to the book pretty well. I don't know why it didn't pick up the way it should have, but I'm going to, give Jewel the hand in telling us what The Institute was about. The Institute by Stephen King. Really, I mean, if you haven't watched it, you should check it out. If it's still up, I don't even know if it's still up. So many shows have moved and transitioned to whatever kind of weirdness is happening in the world of streaming and television and buying people out and doing all these sort of weird things. Go ahead, Jewel, break down the premise of The Institute, if you don't mind.
No, of course not. Of course not. The Institute is a supernatural horror television series written by Benjamin Cavill, directed by Jack Bender, both also serving as executive producers, and it stars Mary Louise Parker, Joe Freeman, and it's based on, as we've already said, the novel by the same name, The Institute by Stephen King. Now, we have this idea of an institution, The Institute, that homes and houses children, and we learn this really early on because you have the young kid being played as an individual. I believe his name is Luke Ellis, I think. I think that was his name. And he's having conversation with his parents. And it's one of those things where you see that they're arguing, but they're not really arguing. And he gets upset. And in that moment of being upset, his mom says something like, please not here. And we see the pizza tray, because they're in a pizza shop, starts shaking and doing weird things. And we realize there's something funny about this kid. He's snarky. You're right. At first you think, man, this actor is arrogant. I don't think I'm going to like it. But I think that was the entire point. And he wakes up in the Institute and he sees that he's not the only kid there. And the kids start explaining what it does for us. It's a group of adults who claim that they're working for the government. They're a secret hush-hush organization, and they're searching for children that have TK, telekinesis, and TP, telepathy. And telepathy is being able to read someone's mind, go into someone's mind, manipulate someone's thoughts and processes. And TK is telekinesis, that's being able to lift and move things with your mind. And they're looking for these special kids to augment and amp up, basically juice the ever living crap out of these kids and their powers. And we learn later on, it's to manipulate the world. We're talking about Illuminati, y'all. It's weird using children with Illuminati stuff, but magical powers. As often is the case with all of Stephen King's things, I think the man don't like children because everything that happens, happens to children. So long story short, adults in this organization, Secret Hush House spy organization, are using children to amp up their abilities, the mental, psychic, telepathy, telekinesis abilities to run the world and do covert operations in various different places. Thrilling, scary, horror, amazing, based on a book on MGM Plus. It's really dope. Nikita, I hope that did, I hope I did it justice.
You did well. You did well because, that's actually what it's about. And so therefore we were watching that and we were checking it out. It's episodic, as she said, and I hope there is a season two. Mary Louise Parker didn't disappoint. I was like, man, she's being really, truly the character she's supposed to be here. Pretty gross. And you know, she runs the Institute. I'm not going to tell you what it's happened on it. If you want to hear spoilers, you can check it out on our podcast on the Institute, which is on anywhere you get podcasts. So next we have up Washington Black. Washington Black was brilliant. That came out on Hulu, and it is the third novel. It's based on a novel, by the way. And it's the third novel by Canadian author S.C. Edugian. The novel was published in 2018, and then it was put out internationally, and it follows the life of George Washington, Wash Black, chronicling his escape from slavery and his subsequent adventures. Now, I'll tell you this, another underrated show. I didn't see a whole lot of people talking about it. Kind of disappointing because it is really excellent. Jewel, what did you think of Washington Black?
Another amazing show in bite-sized edible bits. Episodic shows, and this is one of the things that I love about the streaming services we're watching now, we have the ability to get movie-type characters and productions in small little bite-sized bits in increments of being able to binge everything if you want it and watch it like an entire movie or just see it in episodes. And I felt like George Washington Black was a phenomenal piece of historical fiction based on the elements of things that were happening at the time. We have the enslaved people. You see them from the beginning of the story. You see them all the way through the story. You see them as breaking the bondage and being able to create something bigger and better than the circumstances they were in. We have this young man who gets to have an amazing adventure in a time where, as enslaved folks, we weren't allowed to read, we weren't allowed to learn, we certainly weren't allowed to be inventors and scientists. And he gets to live this adventure, traversing the entire globe and going from place to place. And we see it from a perspective of historical fiction where maybe a lot of people didn't know the connections of the slave trade and the Atlantic and where people came from, where they went, the things that they went through, and the real emotional trauma that they had to go through and surpass that and get above that and beyond that. Really wonderful show. Sterling K. Brown also in this. He runs the town that is mostly made up of Black folks. A lot of them were that ran away from bondage. And this young man, George Washington Black, is no different. He came from Barbados. He was a Bajan and ended up in Canada. A lot of people didn't even think that the North had issues with that. But you have bounty hunters going into the North, going into Canada saying, bring me back my property. This was wrong. You can't just keep them here. And I don't think people understood that enslaved folks were harmed everywhere they went. So really great piece of art following historical accurate type situations in a fantastical world that was just really well made. And kudos to the writer, because she wrote an amazing piece of art that was then brought to life, S.E. Edugian, and I enjoyed it thoroughly, and I would love to see more. more like that. How about you, Nikina?
I agree. She's a brilliant writer. And Washington Black was a brilliant adaptation of the novel. And I was very impressed. You know, Sterling K. Washington was in this. And there were a lot of amazing actors in this. But I'm going to say, as a huge fan of Sterling K., I just thought he did an excellent job. I thought this whole production was done very well. I thought the premise was, it matched the book. You know, a lot of people have these questions, and questions were answered. Again, if you would like to know what we thought of it, we did a podcast on Washington Black. You can check it out. So next we have, I mean, this was a good year. It was a good year for movies. Okay. All kind of movies, as a matter of fact. Beauty and Black. So we aren't always horror and thriller. Sometimes we just messy. Sometimes we like messy. This was a Tyler Cage, Tyler Perry joint. I don't even know if we should be talking about Tyler right now, but nevertheless, we're still waiting for him to put out the second part to this, Beauty and Black. You know, this one, like all of his other movies, has a woman who is in a terrible situation with a whole bunch of, you know, and, you know, she comes from a terrible family. She gets kidnapped. Well, not really kidnapped, but kind of trafficked, I guess you could say. And it all starts out. It's kind of a premonition. You have to watch the first season of Beauty and Black and then watch this season of Beauty and Black. Again, another one we talk about on the podcast. And you have all these characters. Some you'll recognize from your soap operas. So that I love so much. Angie from All My Children. She is playing a villainous woman in this Beauty and Black. I'm going to say that as messy as it is, I thought it was really good. And I think the reason I liked it so much was it was fast paced movie, but the good girl wins. But I don't know now. I don't know how good she is, because she would be having moments where, you know, she seems normal and understanding. She's been saved by this billionaire guy, you know, who's dying right now. He's dying as of today. Maybe not, because he got on an airplane. But Tyler just be writing. So sorry. So then, you know, she's saved, and this beauty empire is being run by this billionaire guy who she met while he was on the DL in the strip club. And it's a hot mess. It was just a hot mess. So much is happening. Okay. You know, something for everybody. You got the LGBTQ community. You got the super elite Black. You got the trap Black. You got, there's just so much happening. I hope no one gets offended, but you know, sometimes you like a little mess, and this is mess. And I will say this right now, because a lot of people get all upset and have a whole lot to say. Not everything is for everybody. You don't have to watch it if you think, you know, that's just not your stuff. You know what I mean? That's not your thing. And I don't think anybody's feelings will be hurt. You don't have to announce, I guess, hate, you know, come on, man. Cause let's be clear, regardless of whether you like Mr. Perry's stuff or not. And there's some things that are super questionable, BT Dubs. But, you know, he makes money, and there's an audience for it. And there's an audience that watches it. And it just so happens that Jewel and I are part of that audience. Jewel, you have the mic.
Yes, girl. like sometimes I like the mess. Sometimes you want to just relax and enjoy what you're watching, because maybe your life ain't that messy, or maybe your life exactly that messy, and the rest of the world don't know, but you can relate in so many ways. And I thought it was a good show. Look, I don't have to agree with Mr. Perry and the things that are going on that end, but I can say that these actors in a format that was relatable to me, for me, by us, I mean, I'm okay with that, because if people could be watching Dynasty back in the day, you know, and All My Children back in the day, I can watch some messy stuff too, and it's okay. Bring it up to the times that we're living in now. I will say that Taylor Polidori Williams, she plays Kimmy fantastic. You're absolutely right. She may be good. She may be bad. I don't know. I just know that I'm intrigued. You know, you felt really, really bad for her. And now you're like, oh, hold on. You're gay, sir. Okay. That's okay. And maybe you have to go through things to go through things and become something different. And so I don't know. It was really nice. I like seeing it. Like Nikita said, we have some veterans in here. We have Debbie Morgan. She plays Olivia. We have Rico Ross. He plays Mr. Horace. You know, we have so many actors and performers that have done such a great job. And we're in a cliffhanger right now. Is Horace going to die? Is he not going to die? Is he going to get cured? Is he not? All I know is that he got married right now and nobody likes the fact that Kimmy's the wife. And he set up her sister, took care of her, took care of her best friend. And I'm like, okay, now what? Where are we at? I thought it was great. It shows a dynamic in not just a big family, but a legacy family, a powerful family. And you think that the mess is just for them other folks out there. No, family's messy. Family's messy. And the more money you got behind the family, the more mess. And I'm just saying, by the way, we start off with this family running Parm products. And it's harming people, like people getting sick because of the damage they're doing to their head and everything else, getting your hair permed. So I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. Because people can relate to what's going on and whether or not we can trust or not trust. And the other themes that are in it is whether or not you can trust products made by us, for us, and legacy. Because you think of these things in little bite-sized pieces, and yet our lives just tumble together and create something different and larger. So you want to agree that, man, these products are great and they're for us and we're supporting it, but they harming us. And how you okay with harming us? And it hits a lot. Y'all need to catch it. It's on Netflix. And again, we're at a cliffhanger. I enjoyed it. Did you enjoy it, Nikita?
Yeah, man, because I like messy stuff sometimes. You know, I mean, I don't like to get in mess now. I don't play like that. But sometimes I just like to be tickled by the messy stuff I see. And I'm just like, I can't believe this. It's good, though, you know, because it's a different energy. Like I said, not everything is for everybody. But I think Jewel made a good point. If you can have Dynasty, which everybody watched religiously, Dallas religiously, Tyler's just putting out something out there that people like to watch. He did really well on the OWN network with his shows on OWN. I watched them and they were pretty. Now, that one show now was a little bizarre and I wasn't really feeling that. And the Oval, after a while, well, most of the time, I was like, hate watching, but I was watching. So I don't know. I don't know what that says about me. I don't think it says that, you know, I'm intellectually stunted. I think it just means I like to watch stuff that cracks me up. And he writes,
you're a well-rounded individual.
I try. You know what I'm saying? Because there's plenty of terrible shows out there that I just know that's not for me. Okay. And this, Beauty in Black, I can relate. Hair care products, cancer, because of the hair care products, cancer period, you know, people. Now, I don't know about, I know about that. Some of those things I was like, oh, no, I know. Oh, that's interesting. What was you doing up in there, Tyler? Shooting that video. You know, but you know, if you live in Atlanta, I mean, it's the worst kept secret that there's so many DL people down there. So were we surprised? I don't think so. But even though they were saying this was Chicago and, you know, interesting, we all know he shoots all his stuff in his studio in Atlanta. So it always has an Atlanta look. I don't care what city it's supposed to be in. So, you know, cause that could be any strip club in Atlanta, any male strip club, any female strip club, you know, like all the Queen's men, I think it's kind of like the same energy. You know what I mean? So we'll move on from that and go to one of our favorites. As a matter of fact, apparently a lot of people's favorites. In our rap, it turns out to be one of our highest, Ironheart. Ironheart, created by Shanaka Hodge. And it's on Disney Plus, which because it's not Hulu anymore, but I guess it's Disney now. I don't know. Anyway, it's on Disney. I don't get into politics or all that stuff. It's on Disney, and it's part of the MCU universe, because, you know, it's so confusing when you're like, is it on Hulu? Is it on Disney? No, it's on Disney. Anyway, it's part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it was produced by Marvel Studios. Man, this was one of, I love this show. I didn't understand all the nonsense about it. I think when I look at the world, at how the world is today, I'm going to get a little philosophical here on this rewind. You know, I am always happy when I see people that look like me on TV. I'm always happy that they got jobs and that those jobs are to entertain us and that they do their jobs well. I'm always happy to see young people on shows, because when I was growing up, it wasn't until I was a teenager till I saw that on a pretty standard, heck, I think I was almost an adult, regular basis. It should not be unique or, you know, some new thing to see a TV show with Black people. Black people are everywhere. Ryan Coogler did this, Ironheart, and it was had all female writers, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And it was done incredibly well. And I always think it's weird when people say things like, it's not supposed to be Black people. It's not real life, folks. It's a comic book character, graphic art character. And imagination is about creating the what ifs, the what could be's. And let's be clear, Ironheart is Black. Okay. I find it interesting the things that people tend to judge the most. My philosophy has always been, if it's not for me, I don't watch it. But I don't want to take it away from anyone else that might enjoy it. And those of you that do that, that try to steal other people's joy, you're soul suckers. And I don't know. Your karma is going to be terrible. I don't wish it on you, but you're wishing it on yourself by doing these things. Because creativity exists. And in the Black culture, it is immense. And this country and a lot of other countries have lived off of it and off of its soul and joy for millennia. So instead of complaining, watch the show, enjoy the show, or don't watch the show and stop complaining. But that's just me speaking to the wind, because, you know, people are going to do what people are going to do. I'll say this. I watch a lot of shows. This one was a very good show. I think it's good for young kids. I think it's good for young ladies to see themselves in this superhero, you know, and I loved it. Riri was played by Dominic Thorne. You know, we broke it down in several episodes on our podcast, and I really enjoyed this show, and we broke it down into two sections. Jewel, what did you think about it? And it had some stellar stars in it. This was, dare I say, a diverse group of people. I mean, oh my, you know, words that are in the dictionary, by the way, diverse, they may be taken out. I don't know, because, you know, intelligence and education and all that, but we'll use it today. Diverse individuals, actors and actresses on the show. And it was fabulous. Plus it was a technology show, which that fired me up. I loved it. Jewel?
It was spectacular. And you're absolutely right. Technologically in creative, it was amazing artwork, diverse in so many ways. We're talking Dominic Thorne as Riri, Anthony Ramos as Parker. We have Matthew Elam as Xavier. Lyric Ross played N-A-T-A-L-I-E. Natalie, the AI. Are you kidding me? And by the way, screenplay written by the great Shanaka Hodge, amazing, but it's based on the comic book written by Eve Ewing, the Black woman who created Ironheart. Amazing, her biography for they took the first episode and stretched it out on what the great Eve Ewing wrote about. And literally took exactly what she wrote and brought it to life. When you can do that in current form right now, it is just spectacularly amazing. We have old characters coming in to start new three themes and threads. You have Ironmonger in there. You have Eric Andre as Rampage. You have so many people, the Hood. You have people in here that collab to create an ensemble cast to make one of the greatest, I guess, spinoffs of who we see as Avengers right now. People start arguing that, oh, she's a girl, or she's black, or she's a woman, and blah, blah, blah. She's no Iron Man. She's not, and she never was. And when she was written, she wasn't written to be Iron Man. She was written to be Iron Heart, a completely different character based on different ideas, circumstances, and situations, and using the idea of Iron Man and Tony Stark as a mentor to strive beyond and past, because she wasn't born with the richness and the famousness of the Stark Enterprises. She was born in Chicago, not heard of, no one knew who she was, and she was a genius. So what do you do with all this genius? Strive farther. I loved it. The show was great. I can't wait to see season two. So they better bring it. And Mr. Coogler, a movie and a series, please, knock, knock, knock on wood. Can't wait. Excited. And within it, Strange Academy, you know, Cree Summer's in it. There's so many things, so many people worth seeing. So if you haven't seen it, check out our podcast. Check out Ironheart. We did it in two sections. It was amazing. Really worth the watch, people. If you haven't caught up yet, it's there. It's ready for you to watch. Nikita?
Yeah, this was Ryan Coogler's year. Mr. Coogler did that. All right. So, you know, Ironheart, excellent. Something for the young, right? And the old. That's the thing about Ryan Coogler. It's almost as if he writes, or he directs, and he says, I want this to be for not just my people. I want this to be for everyone, you know, and that just makes it beautiful. And what makes me happy is when I read things about people all of a sudden discovering it, you know, young people discovering it. This generation of young people, you know, I joke a lot about them, but let me be clear. My nephew is part of this generation. My nephew is Gen Alpha, and they are experiencing the uniqueness and the brilliance of Ryan Coogler that I am very happy and very pleased about, without prejudice. They are experiencing it without prejudice. They don't have the same disease that infects some older people, and that's unfortunate. Not everyone is prejudiced. Not everything is about race. And I wish people would look at cinema the way that I've always looked at cinema, would look at movies the way that I've always looked at movies. Can I dream while I'm watching it? Can I imagine? Does it make me laugh? Does it make me cry? Does it make me go, oh, snap? Does it scare me? Ryan Coogler this year has put out movies from several different genres that have made me do all of those things. He is amazing, and he is deserving of everything that's coming to him. Sinners is the next one with Michael B. Jordan, an amazing piece of work, and it's up for an Oscar in almost every category except for the one that I believe that should be. And we'll see come Oscar season. Right now, everything is ramping up, but let Sinners, amazeballs, the music, the set, the history, the content, the actors, the actresses, the direction, the camera, the attitude, the story, all of it. It starts out the legend gift of making music so true it can pierce the veil between life and death. The Irish, the Choctaw, fire keepers, conjuring spirits, past and future in West Africa called the Griot, could bring healing and also evil. And that was narrated by Annie at the beginning. And then it starts off the movie on the music brought you into, it was magic. It was magic. You could feel the spirit of every ancestor except for the demon. And the demon was still called to it. It was fabulous, man. It was an amazing vampire flick, but you had to really, really, really look at the message. Listen to the message. Listen and see. What is this story trying to tell us? Who are the monsters? What are the monsters? Why are the monsters? And we still found joy, even amongst the monsters. It has religion, it has music, it has blues, which I love. Just amazing. Man, Ryan Coogler, this is your year, and a lot of fabulous actors. A lot of fabulous actors. I want to give a shout out to Wunmi Mosaku and there's just too many to talk about. When Jewel brings it back, I'll probably think of something else to say. That's how much I love Sinners. Jewel?
I love Sinners on so many levels. We would have to do a whole nother podcast on just why you loved it and what about it was amazing. I want to say, look, shout out to Michael B. Jordan for being able to play both sides of this smoke and stack. Shout out to be able to encompass what it's like to be two sides of one coin and to play the love interests of two different women, two different personalities, and still shoot it out. Just so he played every role he had in this amazingly believable, understandable, heartbreaking. Shout out to the demon too, Jack O'Connell. Remick was Remick. And I can't tell you how many Halloween portrayals and understandings of liking the little jig and the shenanigans of it all. He did a great job. Miles Kenton playing Sammy Moore. Oh my gosh. This really is a spectacular performance for so many reasons. This young man, he performed with the soul of an 80-year-old blues player in a movie that was supposed to be reflective of the past being brought into the future. And I just thought that God bless him and his ancestors, because whoever was speaking through this young man, whoever was playing through his little fingers and singing with his voice, really, it was spectacular. It was amazing to see. It was a spiritual experience to see it through the art and the lens of Ryan Coogler, letting us know y'all finna feel a spiritual experience. And we did. It literally pierced the veil for so many people on so many levels. I think on art and performance and genre and reflecting time and era, costume design, cinematography, soundtrack score, in every single moment, if this movie is not put in every single category, then what are y'all even doing? What is the definition of art and cinema? I don't know, because y'all lying. You lying somewhere. You gotta be. Because this was the personification of perfection when you want to show art and make people feel something. Even the people that hate it felt something, and there's a reason why they're hating on it, because they felt something. Maybe, you know, hit dogs holler. Maybe they had to, you know, take a look in a reflection. Maybe they felt some kind of something. But I tell you, if it made you feel, and it made you feel intensely, it's got to be up for something. It was worth the watch, people. It was worth the watch. And unlike other movies, you should watch it more than once. You're going to miss something the first time. It's going to hit you a little differently the second time. And on the third time, everything you saw the first and second time may come into view in a different perspective. It is that good. The man is a genius. And I think he will be remembered that way for many, many, many years. I think it will be a classic. We've had that discussion before. What makes a classic? And I think this will be a classic in the years to come. Nikita?
I agree with you. I agree along the lines of The Color Purple. I agree along the lines of Ben-Hur. I agree along the lines of The Ten Commandments, but not for the same reasons that those are classics, right? You know, when you take a story like Sinners, which is a vampire, but honestly, those that are very smart picked up on it. It was more than a vampire flick. It was a message on the fight between good and evil, and how we always have light even in the dark. And it is the history of African Americans and Black people throughout the world, throughout the diaspora, because every part of the diaspora was displayed. It also showed the connection between the Asian community and the Black community, as well as the Irish with Remick, you know, and Remick felt the call, but he couldn't touch it. And they were already dead, and they still had joy. And they still had joy. And even at the end, you know, some decisions had been made. Beautiful, beautiful story. just brilliant. And I believe it will be a classic because it tells a tale as old as time. Good against evil. It's brilliant. Light against the dark. Survival and living versus existing. Beautiful, beautiful, you know? Yes, ma'am.
I was going to say, to add to that, legacy and who are the protectors of legacy?
Facts.
Appropriators and thieves that come in the night to steal what is yours rightfully by birthright. Exactly. I mean, it's the tale as old as time, right?
Say that.
I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah, you're
and then whether or not you're willing to give it up yourself, who went along to give it up and not protect legacy? I mean, it said a lot.
Because they weren't woke. They weren't aware. They, you know who you're not supposed to let in, and we just be letting everybody in. And you let the wrong one in. Because all skin folk ain't kin folk, and all kin folk ain't skin folk. So, you know, as it goes, but it was brilliant. Thank you, Ryan Coogler. Amazing job. I'm going to be following very closely during the awards season, Jewel and I, because we do every year. And I think this one is going to be, it's going to be hot. Because some of the movies we saw that we're going to talk about, you know, I always say everything is not for everybody. And in this case, there's always a couple that just wasn't for me. So now let's go to the next one. Straw. Straw is a Tyler Perry joint. This one was a little bit, no, it ain't. It was all the same. As is normal Tyler Perry. for Taraji. Taraji, you know, and we did a blog about this one. It's on our website. blurredwords.com. So, a single mother navigates a series of unfortunate events, leading her down an unforeseen path where she becomes embroiled in a situation she never envisioned, finding herself in the center of suspicion in an indifferent world. Baby, this was a sad, sad show. It almost broke me. Straw was so tragic, so emotional, so everything, man. I mean, I felt this movie. She gets up, you know, it's twisted. It's got its surprise ending. And the trauma in this movie, and one that I think a lot of people know. You're just trying to survive. This is a single mom trying to survive. You know, she's living in the projects. I think it's worse than the projects, really. She's, you know, her day starts off bad. Something happens with the police, you know, then bank situation, you know, and then the final straw. They were misreading the situation because when you don't live that life, you can't walk that journey. And a lot of people probably had a lot of judgment, but this happens every day, not to maybe this extent and sometimes maybe more to this extent. And people are silently struggling and you don't know what they're going through. And she had no one to help her. It was good. This is one of Tyler Perry's movies that has you like, dang, her life sucked. I felt bad. But it was super emotional. I could give it the gravitas, you know, because Taraji P. Henson played the heck out of this role. You know, it was Teyana Taylor, Taraji P. Henson, Sherry Shepherd, Sinbad. Thank God. Thank you for giving Sinbad some work after his stroke. Ashley Brashear and Rock. Sometimes I wonder about Mr. Dunbar, but Rockman Dunbar, he got a job. Okay, so, but it was good. Another one of those, people talked about it for a few weeks and then nobody talked about it again. Maybe by listening to this, you'll go and check it out. But be ready with your tissue and your enraged and upsetness. And now think about the times that we're in right now. How many moms, except for the last final part of the movie, obviously, how many moms are living this every day now? Because we're talking about over 300,000 black women have lost their jobs in these United States of America. Over 300,000, okay? Black women who have children, more than likely. You know, we are talking about people who are concerned about healthcare. We're talking about people who are concerned about the high price of groceries and eating and feeding their children. And having to make sure that they're in school. And what are our kids getting taught in school or not getting taught in school? And why are we just living our lives and turning our backs on those that might need us? Because we just live in our lives. This is an everyday thing. Remember in a society where we used to help our neighbor, when we saw someone struggling, we helped them. We called and said, hey, we know this person needs some help, you know, instead of having the peoples coming into your spot, you know, threatening to take your children. There was always someone to help. If we knew someone in the neighborhood that didn't have a lot of family, we became their family. What happened to that? You know, Straw, this is a Tyler Perry joint. Jewel, what did you think?
Yeah, absolutely right. It was impactful on so many levels. And people are going through that right now. How many of you don't have health insurance and have a sick child? How many of you live in paycheck to paycheck and landlord is beating down your door, but your boss hasn't paid you yet because of this, that, and the other? How many of you can't get a day off to pick up your kid, stay there late at the emergency room with them? How many of you just want to catch a break? You need to pay your bills and everybody else is just not listening. I thought it was impactful. Look, I have a particular feeling about Mr. Perry and how he treats women and how I feel. I get the feeling he feels about women in terms of art and his art. And I'm going to say I don't really agree with a lot of it. I just don't. But the art and the actors supersede that feeling, because not only do they have jobs, but then they're willing to put in their expertise to make it bigger than what is written on the page, if that makes sense. I feel as though every time I sit down to watch one of his portrayals, women are going to get injured, harmed, scarred, and a whole bunch of things in a whole bunch of ways. And I'm going to say that this was no different. However, what this did do, because of the actors involved, was shine a spotlight on people who people are willing to not look at, directly look at. You know, the woman that is crossing the street that you're trying to avoid looking at her because for some reason you're ashamed. She ain't ashamed. She ain't ashamed of knowing that that's the only clothes she can afford. She ain't ashamed. She's on her way to work, that she's about to take the bus. Why are you ashamed? Why can't you treat her with dignity when she walks in the line at the bank? Why can't you treat her with respect when you're checking out at her cash register? Why can't you treat her with respect? Why can't you give her dignity? Those kind of spotlights of people that you would more than likely ignore throughout your day, or hope you could ignore them throughout your day, or judge them in a particular way throughout your day, we get a spotlight on just one, and we get to follow them throughout the day. And just when you think time couldn't get any more difficult for one person, it does. And if any of you think none of this happens, I would love to live where you live, in the universe you live in. I would love just a 15-minute break in your world to be able to chillax the way you do, because everything in this show is as real as it gets. As real as it gets. And the lack of dignity that women in this particular show get, we get all the time. All the time, every day. From your own people that stare at you, judging you in the line, where all you really need to do is give me a break today. Give me a break today. Not tomorrow, not 3 days, but today. Can we just not do this today? And the answer is always, no, we finna do this today. It's always today. It's like, not today. So if you've ever felt that feeling, or if you felt like no one pays attention or knows what you're going through, or if you have some kind of struggle you're going through and you're a Black woman, be guarded when you watch this. Be guarded with your heart and your soul. Yes. But everybody else, if you're not, take a moment to watch it and act accordingly the next time you try and ignore somebody. Maybe you should give them a little hand. Maybe you should pay attention. Maybe you should understand. Maybe, because by the grace of God, maybe it might be you in a day or two. I hope not. That's a knock on wood. But it might be. It could be. You never know. It was a great show. If you haven't seen it, Straw, Taraji P. Henson is in it. Teyana Taylor's in it. Sinbad is in it. Sherry Shepherd is in it. Glenn Turman is in it. So many people are in it. They did such a fantastic job. I really enjoyed it. And Nikita's right. There, we did a blog on this and podcast on this. It's just really amazing. Nikita?
Yes. Now, the next one is Alien Earth. It was so boss. It was boss. It was boss. It was amaze balls. You know what? I've watched every Alien movie out there. Every Alien whatever. I don't care. Every Alien whatever. Okay? Now, and I wondered, I thought to myself, I don't know. Is this going to be good? Sigourney Weaver. You know, did not disappoint. I like, you know, the fact that we have streaming and things like that, because it makes life very convenient for me, because I would miss out. I would miss out on a lot of good things if shows like this weren't presented. All right. A lot of people have a lot to say without thinking about the worldview and the accessibility for a lot of people. COVID changed a lot of things. But I also think what streaming has done is had as making directors have to step up their game. Okay. This show, Alien Earth, is an episodic, and it was just brilliant. It was on FX, right? Okay. I think it's like 8 episodes. And the story, or the premise of the story, is it's the year 2120. The Earth is governed by 5 corporations: Prodigy, Weyland-Yutani, Lynch, Dynamic, and Threshold. Cyborgs and synthetics exist alongside humans, but the game is changed when the Prodigy Corporation unlocks hybrids. All right, so there's a young lady on here. Her name is Wendy, played by Sydney Chandler. Timothy Oliphant plays Kirsch. I like Timothy Oliphant a lot. He did a really great job. You know, it's not easy to play a cyborg, okay? I'm just saying, man, I don't think a lot of people could be a cyborg. He convinced me. He seemed very cyborgish. Okay. Lily Newmark as Nibs. Nibs was a little banana cakes, bro. She was a little out there, you know, because you got to watch it and understand how these kids, you know, they think they're humans. I don't want to give it away if you haven't watched it, but they aren't. Okay. They're a hybrid sort of situation. Risha Morjani, Alex Lautner, he plays Hermit, the brother. Samuel Blinken, that's Boy Cavalier. You know, you get to know these characters really well. And there's going to be a season 2, and I'm really happy about it. Essie Davis, Serana James, Ade Edmondson. All right. So when we watch this, and I hope Sigourney Weaver gets like something in the next one, but watching this all the way through, it actually, to me, it definitely did the stages to set you up for Alien. And I thought it was brilliant. It sets you up for the next season, obviously, right? Where the actual kids start becoming, you know, the kids are trapped. Then they become, you know, the cage masters, so to speak. And the aliens, you know, start to understand what's going on. Man, it was just well done. I'm just going to say, I mean, it didn't scare me, but in a way, it made me think, because I'm a nerd, blurred, right? Like, what if some crap like this really happens? Rich people do weird things, bruh. And we don't know. We don't know, because believe it or not, that's kind of the weird idea that some of these billionaires have, to break off the world kind of in that way. Maybe more America, I don't know. But they're plotting something. You got to watch them. Reminds me of Elysium, but with aliens. Okay. You know, if you know anything about Elysium. And I just was like, not only did it look real, I mean, the alien is just messing everything up. The acting was done well. The storyline was done well. The premise was done well. The score, as someone who's not really a hard rock fan, it fit the craziness of this show. Okay. I know that probably some people are super, well, I'm just not. Okay. But I give credit where credit is done, because Nina Simone was in the score, the soundtrack. So I will say, you know, everything else went with the frenetic energy, which is how I feel about that type of music. It makes me very anxious and itchy, but it went along with the frenetic energy. I'm more of a jazz R&B kind of person, you know, classic soul. I do like classic rock though. Jewel, what did you think?
Good question. I enjoyed it a lot. I like almost all sorts of music. I'm not a heavy metal individual at all. So I think I get what you're saying about mixing the energy and the frenetic energy and it jibing with it a little bit. Because it seems like we're on the cusp of annihilation and chaos. And so that makes sense to me. The entire show is based on the three new premises. And it starts off with that in the beginning. In the future, the race for immortality will come in three guises. Cybernetically enhanced humans, known as cyborgs. Artificially intelligent beings, known as synths. And synthetic being downloaded with human consciousness, known as hybrids. None of those are just human beings. If you really pay attention, none of those are just the human beings. We have the race for immortality. You have the cyborgs, which is a mixture of cybernetics and the humans. You have synthetics. They're all artificially intelligent. There's nothing human about them. And then there's the synthetic body with the downloaded human thoughts and consciousness within the body, and that's a hybrid. And nowhere do you see human beings being mentioned. And I feel as though we get a great grasp of how Alien World started the franchise. I think as a prequel, they knocked it out of the park. I can tell you that quite a few people did get scared at a lot of the jump scares. And I thought the new characters were brilliant. I loved the cyborgs. I love the synths. I love the hybrids. I really love getting to know them. And that eyeball creature, there's something about that eyeball creature, the plant creature. Everything was pretty amazing. And of course, we have the face huggers, the xenomorphs. They're all there. I can't wait for season two. And I do hope that they bring back Sigourney Weaver, because she has been just the entire face of Alien, and I think it's important to pay respects to that and not leave her out. I thought everybody played their character perfectly, and you're right, it's not easy to play a synthetic where you're supposed to be non-human at all. And I think Timothy Oliphant did a great job. I think if you haven't seen it, guys, Alien Earth, check it out. It is worth the watch. It was really wonderful. 8 episodes, easy to take on. And when you need a break because it's just too creepy and scary, you could pause it and move on. But I thought it was great. It was a wonderful show.
Yeah, it was good.
What do you think, Nikita?
It was good. It was good. I thought that it was excellent, actually. I just like alien stuff. And there were some jump scares. I mean, not like it, but still, it was scary. It was interesting. It wasn't like super scary. You know, I grew up at a time when the stuff was like super scary and dark and, you know, Frankenstein, stuff like that. But this was scary because the original Alien, if you remember the original Alien, there were moments, right, where the camera pans in and the alien is drooling. Where the camera pans in and the egg sacs are beating, where the camera pans in and the alien is getting ready to just, I loved it. And then this is coming, popping out of your stomach and you're like, oh my God, I never want to eat food again. And I don't like to look at worms or anything. Caterpillar. I don't care about any of that. Remember when you used to think, oh, a caterpillar is so beautiful. After you finish watching Alien, you're like, oh, forget that. Okay. I'm not thinking about that because you're the cocoon that the alien's coming out of. Okay. So that's just the craziness that I'm looking at. I loved it. Good show. Next. And let me tell you, this was a good year for movies and TV shows, by the way. We have the next few we're going to talk about and then some that we don't have on here is Fabadoo Show. As my word of everything. And Marge is the little eyeball lady, and I hope she gets a creature, actually, and I've named her Marge. And I hope she gets her own show. I mean, because she's a really smart eyeball. Anyway, anyone, if you watch it, you'll know what I'm talking about. You know, calamari, anybody? But, so, I'm corny. I love myself, though. That's okay. Eyes of Wakanda. Magic. Four episodes weren't enough. This was another Ryan Coogler masterpiece. Animation, brilliant animation, by the way. Brilliant animation. And I was just mesmerized by it. Everything about it. The creativity, the storyline, which goes right along with, you know, everything, you know, everything about the Wakandan history. You know, I think that also it's what leads us up to, if you haven't seen it yet, I don't want to spoil it, but it's four episodes, starts off telling the story of Wakanda, right? About the Dora Milaje. And you start out, it starts out fast. The story starts off fast when they're pursuing someone named Lion. And it's a secret society. And they really protect the sanctity and the history and the artifacts of Wakanda. You know, this is all this Black Panther, you know, all of the Black Panther lore, right? And they need to save history or save time, you know, and these are the Guardians. And this was just amazing. I will tell you this. When I watched this, when you're growing up as a child and you're watching cartoons, you know, and you're watching, depending on how, each generation, you'll see that animation has changed over generations and has become sterile. You know, it's not art anymore. It's computer generated features. This was art. This was animation in its rawest form, as it used to be. You know, this was video in its rawest form. This was flipbook art, in my opinion. And it was beautifully, beautifully done. Everything that Ryan Coogler has done has been very meticulous. From using the camera in, you know, Sinners, to how he used the camera, how he used the magic in the works in Eyes of Wakanda, to how he used the magic in the works, and I think almost anything that he does. It's going to be very interesting to see what he does with the ET, what is it? It'll come to me. Even to how he used the true elements of technology in Ironheart, from how to build the uniform and everything. He's going to be doing the X-Files here coming up. But let me tell you about this Eyes of Wakanda. If you have children, please have your kids watch it. It's magic. You want to talk about, if I was a young child watching this, I would dream so much. Imagination would soar in a way. It was just magical. And even at my age, I watched that and I said, magical. It was genius. Jewel?
Agreed. 100%. I think we are in a time where, fortunately, opportunities are given to people like Mr. Ryan Coogler, like Shanaka Hodge, to create amazing work that can also symbolize that we exist in this world. We've always existed in this world, and to reimagine the world with us in it. As Black folks, it's very hard to rewind history. And remember, you're listening to The Rewind with Nikita and Jewel. And see yourself in these opportunities, in these places. You can dream a lot of dreams. It's very difficult to see yourself in positions that you have always thought of as it's not an opportunity for you. These doors are closed. And in these art forms, in this work of art presented, and the ones we've talked about so far, you get to see a different way that the world could be, the way you thought the world, you may not have even known the world existed in that capacity, but it can, it has, and it is here now for us to enjoy in all of its beautiful colors and sounds. So we have Eyes of Wakanda, and it's an anthology. And it is a four-episode anthology of various different ways the artifacts belonging to Wakanda has found its way in history, and it reimagines stories that you may have already known or your children are learning about right now. And it makes you ask the question, what if, and if you've ever read comics, there's an entire line of what if comics to make you ask that question, what if, and ponder the possibilities if things were different, if people were given a different role, born in a different place, accepted a different circumstance or title, and then how would that story play out? That's the what if comic book lines. But this particular one is an anthology of various different stories that makes you, the audience member, question what if. And we now see how far in history in this universe, Wakanda and its artifacts and its ability to keep itself hidden and still touch all facets of life as we move through the future. And I think as it portrays these four different stories, it is amazing and beautiful. The interwoven tapestry of us as Black folks and where we sit in history, in all the myths of the past, in all the legends we've heard, in all the things that we hope for the future, see in the future, and all the inventions and all the change. We now get to see us there, albeit in fantasy, but still there nonetheless. For example, the Dora Milaje, if you're unfamiliar, they're really based on the women warrior fighters in Africa. And it's an all-woman warrior team. And that's what the Dora Milaje is based off of for Wakanda and the idea of Black Panther and who's protecting Black Panther and Wakanda, the country, the nation. And we have this one woman who just doesn't seem to fit. And because she doesn't fit, she makes the perfect leader to find these artifacts through time. And we have four stories where we actually talk about Crete, the Trojan Wars. We have Memnon. We even bring in Kunlun, Iron Fist, the first Iron Fist, which of all people is a woman. We've always seen him as a blonde white guy. The stories we get to see interwoven with the idea that maybe Black folks have always been there. Maybe we have always been powerful. Maybe we could be reimagining these stories in a different type of light, I thought was beautiful. And again, thank you, Nikita, for bringing up the artistry, the flip book, the art. I haven't seen art like this in a very, very, very long time. And I hope we come back to it, because hand-drawn, amazing art on the screen, animated for us to just appreciate why the colors were picked and how the cinematography goes. It really is a work of art for all ages. Children would definitely love it. Adults will love the stories reimagined, but it is a present for your eyes, your ears, and for your imagination. And I hope all of you are willing to watch it and unwrap it, because it really is a sight to behold. Eyes of Wakanda on Disney by Marvel Animation, developed by Ryan Coogler. And I can't say enough. And I hope you see it. You'll recognize a lot of the stories and the themes, again, because historically it's about certain things that actually happened in history, but reimagined, or myths that you've already heard of, written a long time ago, but reimagined. Pretty amazing. Fantastic work. Nikita?
Thank you, Jewel. Yes. You know, the art is called, it's hand-painted Afro-futuristic animation style. It blends 2D and 3D elements for a painterly, as she said, as I said earlier, hyper-stylized look. They want to bring in Spider-Man and all that, but I can take you back a little bit further. You know, it's really inspired by contemporary Black artists, allowing for fluid, vibrant visuals across historical Wakandan settings. This style, done by Axis Animation, gives it a moving painting feel, distinct with other Marvel animated shows and perfect for its globe-trotting historical adventures. You know, I used to look at years ago, in the many places I've been, and I watch, you know, TV and movies and all these other different places, and read art and comics and stuff like that there. And I was always fascinated, you know, by the earlier art styles that we used to have. Then I went to Japan, and their style, before they were, as they were starting to move into their particular style of animation, anime, you know, and then looking at African art, which has always been kind of flowy. And it's interesting to me that we are calling this Afrofuturistic, you know, and I love that for us. I love that for the future. I love that for the time, because it's techno art, right? You know, Basquiat, thought about that. You know, Basquiat is magically flowy, but the artist at Disney, right, took that and weaved technology, using the technical aspects to, you know, develop and read about the history of the Disney artist, first Black Disney artist. Read about art history. Read about, you know, and not just one, but all world art history. You'd be amazed. You'd be fascinated. And I love that they did that, this type of art here in Eyes of Wakanda. In our podcast, in several of our different shows or whatever, you know, we tend to go deeply in. It's very difficult for me. We're not doing spoilers here. We're doing summaries. Tough call for ladies who do spoilers. So we try not to spoil it for you. We hope that you enjoy what you're watching. We hope you enjoy what you're seeing. And we hope you enjoy what you're hearing. Remember, we're rewinding what we watched this year and what we talked about this year. So the next one is going to be Alice in Borderland. For those of you that are great fans, remember they were going to cancel Alice in Borderland at one time. And now Alice in Borderland has a season 3. You know, I don't know. I think this is the end. I mean, I might be one more. Not sure. Probably got to check. But it was pretty good. It was pretty good. We just did that podcast on Alice in Borderland. I think there were a lot of different reviews, you know, from the first one to the second one to this one, the third one. This third one, its premise, it went quick, right? And it also was kind of emotional. I was kind of emotional watching it, you know, because it talked about family. And I think that they're trying to, the whole goal here is not to keep it just where it's at, right? And it's going to bring it to America. But Jewel, tell us about Alice in Borderland season 3. And we did it on our podcast in two parts. By the way, very excellent. And when we do our podcast, we break down each episode. Obviously, we're not doing that here now. But why is the Joker so important? Tell us about it, Jewel.
Oh, Alice in Borderland. The Joker is important because we start off in season 1 and season 2 with the understanding that there is a game of life and death that people have been plucked off of the streets of Japan to play. And their time in this world is all based on their visa. And their visa is based on a deck of cards card that is given to them. So they have a certain number of time based on the numerical value of the card given to them. And we know that there's 4 suits in a deck of cards, right? Hearts, spades, clubs, diamonds, and we have the numbers 1, oftentimes seen as the ace, all the way up to 10, or right? And then we have the face cards, the Joker, the King, the Queen, and the Jack. And in every deck of cards, you have 2 Jokers, and in the first season, you're just trying to stay alive and you deal with just the number cards. The second season, you notice that people are running it inside the game. And these are the face cards. You have queens, you have kings, you have jacks. And we think it's done. Everybody leaves. And in the beginning of season 3, people are living regular lives. And turns out none of this happened. It was a meteor that hit, and we're going through the idea of, man, maybe that's how this game, you know, was going to end up. But at the end, if you're paying attention to season two, as the big blimps in the face cards were burning, you were left with just the Joker card. And it made you think, maybe we're not quite done. On season three, we're living through this giant event, this meteor that hits Tokyo. And we get to see the characters that played in season one and season two. They're just living their lives. So Arisu married the girl that everyone thought was Alice in Borderland. It turns out she's not. And they are married. He's a psychotherapist. He's trying to see why all these people happened to be in the same spot with recollections of small memory that seemed to collaborate, that they were in the same spot at the same time, but it had nothing to do with the meteor. And he's trying to figure it out. Eventually, we find out that Borderland is a bigger place than we could ever imagine. It is a limbo between the living and the dead. And Arisu's girl, she is trying to be the assistant of this professor who's consumed and obsessed with death. And so much so that he harms somebody and they end up back in the games. For a few moments, people don't remember how they got here, why they're going through this stuff. And it's all a battle of wits, understanding, but there's always a clue to make you, if you're paying attention, there's always a clue to help you survive and help other people survive as well. And Arisu and everyone there are going through trials and tribulations in real life. And that is reflected throughout all the episodes. Okay. Eventually they realize they've been here before. Eventually they realize this is really life and death. And eventually we come to understand that the Joker is running everything. There's a twist at the end. If you want to know about it, we really don't want to spoil anything. This is just a rewind. We're just trying to tell you what we watched, what we're looking forward to during the year of 2025 as we wrap things up. But we did a podcast on it, so you can catch that out and you can watch it. The Joker is integral and most important because all the heads and the face cards are out. All the visas are gone. Somebody's pulled them back in. They want them to play these games in a larger scale. They want to keep the genius there. Arisu is important. Why is he important? Because he's a genius and he can figure things out. But Borderlands, where is it? What it's about? Why are we here? Are we alive? Are we dead? Limbo or not? Who's the Joker? Is he real? What is it about? It's a lot. And it's so intriguing. And I think you're right. We might end up with just one more season. I don't know if they can go a further than four, but season three, it was emotional. It was sad. It was happy, but it made me think, oh my God, it put season one and season two into perspective and it made a lot of sense. So if you had any questions about season one and season two, watching season three and then rewinding it in your head, it would make a lot of sense. Like how they got Tokyo as a replica and how they got enough for 10,000 million flaming arrows because you didn't answer the question right. I was trying to figure that out. Did you ever figure that out, Nikita?
No, I didn't. Sorry, it's delay. It's delay. There was a lot going on. But, you know, it's TV, right? So, you know, and it's also a virtual world. It's an alternate universe. So I think a lot can happen in an alternate. Simultaneously, while we're sitting here talking on this podcast, someone right now is in Europe or in an alternate universe talking on their own podcast saying, I don't know how they did that. How were they able to? That's pretty good. That's pretty good. So all of these that we're talking about, we've done podcasts on. And we have one more that we've done a podcast on before we start talking about the ones that I'm just going to tell you. Finally, we're going to do a podcast on some, one of those. I'm Frankenstein for sure, for sure. Okay. Wednesday. Okay. The synopsis on Wednesday. Take it away, Jewel.
Wednesday. Okay. Wednesday is creepy and kooky, mysterious and ooky. altogether spooky and part of the Addams Family. So if you didn't know, that was what it was about. Wednesday is a little girl in the Addams Family. And it starts off with being introduced to her going to boarding school in the previous seasons. We are now coming back to the school that she is the most popular kid at, and she is the most introvert ever. And we are learning so much more about her and her family. And now Pugsley, her brother, is going to be attending the school as well. We learned so much about Wednesday in this particular one. There's a reason why she's monochromatic. I did not know this, but I guess it was real. When she's asked before, why are you always in black and white? Why is that? And she says, I'm allergic to color. Guess what, y'all? She really is allergic to color. We find that out. Oh, okay. So I'm being told right now by my producer in my ear that we're not supposed to be doing this right now. So I'm going to stop right there. But hopefully I got you a little intrigued to check out Wednesday. This is the next season. We have a lot to talk about. And if you haven't seen it, go back, rewind it, go check it out on Netflix. And then listen to our podcast. We did a podcast on Wednesday. We have all your favorite characters are back. All of those that you thought weren't going to be back, they were back. And new ones as well. Nikita, so then what are we talking about Wednesday?
You're correct. Also know this, we spoil. So you got to watch the show before you listen to the podcast. Unless you're one of those people that go, I want to know what this is about, then go and watch it. That's someone who's very secure in themselves that can do that. Most of us humans aren't secure in ourselves. We're like, oh, you're spoiling it now. I don't want to watch it. Really? There isn't anything that can stop me from watching a movie if I want to watch a movie. I don't care what you tell me about it, because your view might be skewed. See, that's the whole thing about cinema. That's the whole thing about movies, baby. It's however you see it, however you feel about it. Now, with Wednesday, I love the Addams Family. This is just, you know, this is season two. A lot of stuff is going to be happening. She has new powers, or, you know, problem with her powers, I'll say. Hopefully that's not a spoiler, but that's part of it. As Jewel said, the brother is, Pugsley is there, a little slender, more slender than I like, but he's there with the same outfit and the gear that he wears in the regular Addams Family, you know? The whole family is there. So I thought that was new and different and worked out. You're going to have to watch it, see it, because there's really, first of all, you see them maturing and moving forward. You're seeing relationships form, relationships dissolve. You're seeing teenage angst, right? And you're seeing just at the borderline between adult and teenager. And I just love this. I love this aspect. And I used to watch the Addams Family as a kid, just like I used to watch the Munsters. And I think they did a good job. Nothing is perfect, but it's really well done. It's well done. I like the music. I like the premise. This isn't rocket science. This isn't an in-depth story. This is the Addams Family. So we can watch it. We can enjoy it. And we can give it the props that it deserves, because it's well done. It really is well done. And I hope you all enjoy it. I hope you watch it if you haven't watched it. And I hope you check out our podcast and see what we have to say about it. Huge fan. And just because we're huge fans, though, you know, you don't have to be. But I hope we give you a way to be a little bit more objective, you know, because even though she's all about black and white, we see things in a multitude of colors. So, Jewel, what do you think?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's a great show. You should check it out. And we hope we haven't spoiled anything for you. And again, this is the rewind. So everything we've seen, everything we would like to see, that's all we're checking up and catching up on. But you're right. I think she's a colorful character, even though she's in black and white.
Yeah, because Jewel has already said she's in black and white. But Jewel, check this out. Check us out. We have Frankenstein, a Mary Shelley classic, redone by Guillermo del Toro, who's a very odd person. But, you know, we're going to be doing that podcast later on. But the summation of this, all I can say is brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And I'm going to tell you, I didn't get to see it in the theater, but watching it, and this is just my opinion, and I'm going to say this as someone who has accessibility issues, that it was important that I get to see it, and I'm glad I got to see it. You know, I saw it on my TV, and it was beautiful. Magnificent, actually. You know, I think it's going to be a tough award season when it comes to putting these movies together. Two of my favorites so far that are up for awards, by the way, Sinners and Frankenstein. Frankenstein, deservedly so. Sinners, deservedly so. I won't say about the others that are up there yet till we talk about it, and I'll try to be kind. But Frankenstein, from the initial introduction of the show, the music, the score is supposed to fit every scene, and the score is supposed to make you feel, right? What Guillermo del Toro did in Frankenstein, in my opinion, which is the story of the mad scientist, you know, who it gave us the beginning of the premise, right? The mother and everything, who is trying to create life, make life, right? You know, and his name is Frankenstein, Victor Frankenstein, and he builds this creature. And I think it took people a long time to realize that he always called it the creature. You know, this was his creation, and he didn't have the decency to even give it a name, right? And we see them on the ice, and we see the creature. And what Guillermo del Toro did so well, and he does so well, he does, you know, I like to call it visual aspects. He makes your eye look exactly at the target, from the monster to the ship, from the monster to the character, from the monster to Frankenstein. And then Frankenstein tells his story, and then we stay sectioned off on that story, that tale. We are looking at it through the monster's eyes later, and you feel for the creature. For when the creature does for the first time goes out, or, you know, away from the castle or whatever. And there's very emotional stuff in Frankenstein. And I was emotional. I was like, Guillermo del Toro, the master of the macabre, you know, has made me emotional over the creature. But Mary Shelley did also. Great writer, you know. Please read Frankenstein if you haven't. I think he really, 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 really dissected that book so well and retold the telling of Frankenstein in a way I haven't seen since Vincent Price. You know, it's just brilliant. Frankenstein on Netflix. And the characters that are played by so many brilliant actors. I think this young boy that's in here, this young man that's in here, I think, you know, it's going to be tough for him, you know, because he's going to be up against some really big players. I hope he doesn't allow it to go to his head. I think that happens sometimes with young folks. You know, I will say this, that I don't want to jinx it because I really like Sinners. and there's people I want to win in Sinners. But he did a good job. I will say, when we do the podcast, you'll get to hear how I, you know, our whole breakdown. Jewel is always, and I give Jack the jacket here, you know, she is brilliant in the breakdown, in the analysis. I always talk about the technical aspect. The story aspect is brilliant. As an avid reader, the story aspect is brilliant. All of the nuances, even the light in the room description. If you've read Victor Frankenstein, if you've read Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, you know, she's very descriptive about the creature, about the lights, about the room, because the story is trauma. The story is trauma, you know, and redemption. Jewel?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Thank you. Thank you so much, Nikita. One of my favorite books, Frankenstein or the Modern Prometheus, Gothic novel written in 1818 by Mary Shelley, which ironically, she was on vacation with a few other authors, and they were going to be there for a few weeks, and it was storming and raining and gloomy. And they said, well, since we have nothing else to do because the weather is quite literally not great, why don't we have a contest on who can make the best story. And wouldn't you know it, out of her brilliant mind came out Frankenstein or the modern Prometheus in 1818. And never since has there been, she is the most recent creation of not just a franchise, but a creature of their own design, because vampires always existed in mythology, and so did zombies and other things. But Frankenstein, the actual idea of reanimating multiple bodies together with this mad scientist as the actual monster, she did that. She did that. And yeah, Frankenstein is not the name of the monster, people. Not the name of the creation. He's the monster, but he's the doctor. Dr. Frankenstein. Amazing. I thought it was beautiful. The art was great. Victor Frankenstein, the actual scientist, was played by Oscar Isaac. He did an amazing job. Christopher Waltz is there. I love him. He has a way of playing the most sinister, horrible people in the world. I'm a big fan of Christian Convery, the young Victor Frankenstein. He was in Sweet Tooth. So if you guys have ever seen the episodic show where the world is going through an apocalyptic weird change of events and nature has swapped itself and human beings are no longer being born, weird animal baby, human baby mixture out of a test tube. He's born with deer antlers and he doesn't have a belly button because he's a test tube baby. And you have a little pig girl and you got a lizard kid. It's called Sweet Tooth and he plays Sweet Tooth. And here he plays such a great young Victor Frankenstein. This kid is going places and I can't wait to see where he goes because he's doing a phenomenal job. I did feel emotion for the creation. And I think that was the point. I felt that in the book as I was reading it, because the creature is basically a child or a new being in this big, giant, rotting, grotesque body and has no counterpart, being the only one. And then having to maneuver through a world where you're just an object and you have no love, you have no parents, you have no significant other, you have no friends, you have no mirror to decide whether you're alone or you're not. And the person that created you or brought you here or invented this hates you for being who you are. There's a lot. There's a lot to unpack as a book, as a story, thematically. There's so many other themes in it, but Guillermo del Toro, he's a master of the macabre in so many ways, but I'm going to say in this particular reimagining, the things Mary Shelley writes about, she is able to conceptualize horrors, emotions, the entire macabre feel of this dreary, miserable life. And we get to experience it in our brain. And this man was able to pluck out the words and put them on screen. And I felt like I was rereading it. Matter of fact, after I saw it, I was like, I got to go find my copy. I have to find my copy and read it again, because it just screamed the words off the page. And I hadn't read it in years. I would say decades. So if you have never read it, please read the book. And you don't have to read it on pages. You can have a digital copy. You can have the audio book. But the book is amazing and absolutely fantastic. This man placing it on the screen and being able to stream it, because I didn't see it in theaters either, for me was just a further love affair I have with this created story. I love this story in so many ways. And this is just another moment of, man, when someone reads a book, falls in love with the literature, and can replicate it on screen, you almost have a 360 globe tangible thing of, man, art was created for amazing things. So if you haven't seen it, go out and see it, stream it. It is beautiful. It is amazing. It reminds me a lot of A Christmas Carol, the one done by Jim Carrey. And I just recently saw it because we're in the Christmas season right now. And it's very hard to take a large book and to replicate what you read and what you feel and put it on the screen. And I think Guillermo del Toro and these fantastic actors really did a spectacular job. The book came alive and I believed every moment of it. It was really well done. Nikita.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jewel. And I don't want to hear anybody saying that Guillermo's not the master of the macabre. We know. I mean, there's been so many. But right now, he does creepy, deepy stuff. So let's leave it at that. Because I'm telling you, watch some of his stuff and you'll be like, holy smokerelli, some banana cakes. That dude's mine. Okay, so now these were the things that we saw that like really stuck out to us. Now we saw a lot of different things this year. And so just for time's sake, we're going to go through it kind of rapidly because I don't know what time it is anyway, and it shouldn't matter. But I don't want to get caught up saying something inappropriate about a movie just because I don't like it. I could just be reasonable. I leave that to other people to say how they really feel. Oh, One Weapon. What is that? Weapon. One Battle After Another with Leonardo DiCaprio. Very interesting. Wasn't terrible. I didn't dislike it. I thought it was a wild ride. It, you know, I didn't hate it. But I'm going to be honest. You know, I think some movies are just good to watch. And you can just enjoy them. I thought Leonardo DiCaprio was an interesting character. I thought Tiana Taylor was an interesting character. I thought it was a good movie. I don't know what other people see because I'm not in their eyes. And like I said, I don't think we all have to see things the same. I think that when we talk about the time that we're in now, I understood why they did it that way. And I thought, that's interesting. It was okay. It wasn't terrible to me. Jewel?
It was definitely a movie. It was, watching it made me go through one battle after another. I thought when I watched it, I was like, that's interesting. Viva la revolution. Yay. We're about change and stuff. And I thought it was interesting that you were using Black women as sexual objects and people to be harmed. And like, I don't know, the white guy gets away with everything. And then the other white guy gets pretty much away with everything. I don't know. I thought, like I said, I went through one battle after the other and I definitely watched it. I could say that I watched it. I watched it.
Thank you, Jewel. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So we'll go to something. I watch a lot of stuff. I don't know what everybody else is. Sometimes I look at stuff and I read stuff online and I go, really? Okay. All right. So It's All Her Fault with Sarah Snook. Fire! That's all I'm going to say. That movie, that TV series, that show, it was good. G-O-O-D. Good. No, fire. Sarah Snook can act. And I've watched everything she's been in. And she brought it. She brunked it. Is that a word? Anyway, she did. And Dakota Fanning was in it. And I was just like, man. Okay, it's about a mom. You know, whose child is missing and her husband is everybody could be the person who it's a good story. I don't want to spoil it. And you know what? It's the best kept secret because my brother who tells everything, he did not tell and he tells everything. Okay. And what did you think? It was fire. It was just fire. It's all her fault. And Jewel. Didn't tell me nothing. Go ahead, Joel.
Wow. Okay. Well, we're going to put that on the shelf and we'll address that later. I saw it and I thought it was great. I thought it was absolutely amazing. It was all her fault. I love mysteries, you know, and I love whodunits. And I will say that Sarah Snook and Dakota Fanning did the amazing stuff. Abby Elliott, if you're a fan of The Bear, she's Sugar. She's Sugar in The Bear. And so she's in it too. And I thought Michael Peña did a fantastic job as the cop. So every episode, you know, you got a really good whodunit and mystery when every episode, no, it was the dad, it was the butler, it was the maid, it was the mom, it was the babysitter, it was the lawyer, it was the dog down the street. Every episode, it was another person that I was like, you looking shady as all get out. And so for me, it was a win. It was a great time. Great time had by all. I enjoyed it. It was spectacular. Good job, people. Y'all did a good job. It was a little unseasoned for a cast. There was a lot of white folks. And so, I mean, shout out to the brother that played in it and shout out to Michael Peña. I mean, he was very white. But, oh, and then babysitter too. Yeah, because she was, yeah. But, you know, you can't win them all, you know. You can't win them all. It's not as diverse in this multi-billion dollar neighborhood. So, you know, but other than that, I thought it was great. That would be the only thing that I would be like, where are all the people at? Why are they all white? But then I realized why they're all white. So it was good. Nikita.
Okay, so now we go to... How to Train Your Dragon. That's one of my, you know, I love How to Train. I don't know how many grownups like How to Train Your Dragon, but I love How to Train Your Dragon. When we watched that, that was a live action one. And I'm not always sure I'm going to like live action because I just think it's kind of weird, like Play-Doh, but I really enjoyed it. I got emotional. Lately I've been getting emotional. I don't know what it is. I don't know. Could be the PM or whatever, but or probably the big M or the past it or whatever they call it. Anyway, I got emotional. Plus, I love the dragon, and it was just like the cartoon, darn it. And I could remember Saturday, the ship pulling in, and I'm sitting there watching How to Train Your Dragon on the Cartoon Network, one of my favorite channels, by the way, back in the day. And, you know, many years later, I still feel the same excitement, you know, watching this. So you got kids, you got grown-up kids and little kids. Have them watch that. It's really good. I think it's ageless. Jewel?
I think it is ageless too. I agree with you. I thought it was wonderful. It followed the animation really, really well. All the characters were the same. And it was amazing what technology can do to bring Toothless and all the other dragons to life. I thought all the actors did spectacularly, and I really, really enjoyed it. And it's great for all people of all ages. So I thought it was great.
What are some other shows that you watch? I mean, I have some that I watch, but what are some of the other ones that you watch? I think I watched them too, but I can't remember.
Okay. Marvel Zombies was really, really good. It's animated, episodic, very What If based. Again, another branch can only be on Disney Plus. If you're watching it, if you're really into the MCU, check it out. That was really great. Another Sterling K. Brown show, Paradise, Paradise, Paradise. If you ever wondered what happens when all things hit the fan, what's going to happen? Who going to do what? Where are you going to go? What are you going to do? Is anybody going to be saved? Well, they tell you when things happen and everybody has to get on a plane and then people have to go places. That was amazing. And I think it got up for another season. So I'm looking forward to that. I really, really like that. And then Watson with Morris Chestnut. It's based on Sherlock Holmes and he's Watson in this case, but he came back from Afghanistan, which was interesting because if you've ever read Sir Conan Doyle's series and compilation of Sherlock Holmes, they really were fighting in Afghanistan back in the day when they wrote it. And it was pretty amazing. And I like the way they do that series, the episodic series. And I think it was brought back for a second season. I've watched Monster, the Ed Gein series on Netflix. And holy cow, that was, I usually don't like mockumentary type documentary things. And I don't even know why I watched it. I think I watched it because I wanted to have something different to talk about, because I knew we were going to do this end of the year thing. And if you haven't seen it, it is kind of gruesome, obviously, because it's about the Ed Gein. He was the person who lived with his mom and was necrophiliac and as one of the first serial killers. And he did horrendous, 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 horrendous things. It was interesting how they did it, though, because they then show us how genres in movies, in particularly horror, have changed based on art, art imitating life, life imitating art, and then back again. Because Alfred Hitchcock picks up his story. And because he picks up his story, we get Psycho. And Psycho is based on him and the real story of Ed Gein. And we have Hitchcock in this series. And he starts explaining how this is just, this is something nobody's ever done before. We have to do it. And then he tests Psycho, the movie, and he tests showing all the horrendous things that Ed Gein did in his film Psycho. And he then sits in the audience and people start screaming, throwing up, fainting, going crazy because of Psycho, the first real horror flick that shows things. Usually it was off screen. And then everyone else starts doing it. And he realizes and has a reflective moment where he says, I think I've done something terribly wrong because people didn't understand the story I was trying to tell. And now that I've done it, there's no way to undo it. There's no way to undo it. And we know that within it, there's also Texas Chainsaw Massacre that comes from that. We know that Ted Bundy did what he did because of it. We know that the Burroughs guy, I think it's like Ned or something, Burroughs, that serial killer, he did it. We have so many moments where life has touched and connected because of this one horrendous person, and how art then changes the world as well. So I thought that was interesting. I don't know if I'm saying it's the greatest thing, but it was definitely interesting, especially if you like horror and you want to know the reason and the what motivated where we are in horror today, especially slasher films, and what it's based on. Those are just a few of the things that I've watched, that I've seen. What about you, Nikita? Oh, and I think a Korean, I want to say it's Korean, I'm not exactly sure, it's called The Great Flood. It was really good. That was amazing, and it had a twist turn at the end. Last day on Earth, one chance for survival, and then at the end, it's just like, what? This mom with her son, and there's a flood, and it's almost like a typhoon type flood, but not. And then she goes through all these things to save herself. Woo! It blew me away. Foreign film on Netflix, but it was really good. Nikita?
Yeah, I fell asleep on that one. But it's just the way I am. You know, I fall asleep and I have to catch it again. Because I think I was, I wasn't confused. I think it was just a lot. And so then I went back and rewatched it. And sometimes I have to do that. Asian films, they tend to, you got to have time, you know, and I'm usually watching those because they're so long. I'm usually watching those while I'm working and I'm, you know, giving my third ear. So it was good at the very beginning. I was really, but I did fall asleep. I'm not going to lie. And then I had to watch it again. It was really good. I'm a true fan of Korean and, I like Korean. I like Japanese. I like, and I like any Asian, but I don't want to offend, a lot of Asian people because I watch Indian movies. I just watch all kinds of movies, world movies. Thank you for those. I actually bookmarked the, I didn't think I was going to like it, so I didn't watch it. you know, because I tend to be someone who can be short attention span on certain things. And I'm not a fan of documentaries or, you know, mockument. I'm just not a fan, but your description of it makes me very interested. That's why I marked it down. I have on here, and before we go to the books and games, definite games, and it's short, it's quick, and then we're going to wrap it up. The Price of Confession, you're going to have time on the weekend to watch The Price of Confession and, oh my gosh, this other one that I really wanted to tell you about because it was so freaking good. It was so good that it was like a Korean Sybil with the serial killer in it. It was amazing. And let me see if I wrote it down, and I hope I did. There you have As You Stood By. That was good too. Let's see. Oh, I'm upset now. I'm upset. Take the mic while I find it, because this was one of my God, favorite. It's 20 episodes. It's 20 episodes. Jewel, take the mic real quick and let me find it.
Yeah, sounds good. We have covered quite a few so far. I want to say that I also enjoyed Missing You. It's the British small miniseries based on the Harlan Coben's book. It was really wonderful. I like that. Zero Day with Robert De Niro. There is a cyber attack. Something happens in the United States and they're actually attacking him using a weapon that is secret that no one knows, and no one can feel it goes through sound waves. And he feels like he's losing his mind as the president of the United States. Department Q was amazing. It's a small British miniseries set, and it's the first season. They do their seasons differently. That was really great. Forever, Black, coming of age, amazing story, love story, two kids finding themselves. And in this relationship, it's based on a book and it was redone. That was really great. The Residence is a lot of mystery and comedy all at once. I really enjoyed that a lot. And a movie that people talked about a lot, and there was a lot of buzz about it, that's Adolescence. It's about a British boy who was bullied. He's really just an incel, and he ends up murdering one of his classmates. I didn't really care for that one, but I figured I'd mention it because we watched it and it had a lot of hype. Tomb Raider, the animated series, Lara Croft, it was phenomenal. I loved it. There's part two. I haven't started season two, but it was amazing that they did part one and part two so quickly. So I'm excited to see that. That was really good. The Recruit season two dropped and the Night Agent dropped. They were both almost similar, pretty similar. And I think both of them were canceled. That's unfortunate. I just got through Untamed with David Banner, and that was wonderful. That was at Yellowstone Park. I really enjoyed that one. And shout out to The Diplomat season two, Kerry Russell. That was a good show too. I really like that one a lot. I'm not sure if you're ready to come back to the mic, but there is also Long Bright River with Amanda Seyfried. And yeah, I think 9 Perfect Strangers season two with Nicole Kidman. That was okay. I think the first season was better. And then, of course, Knives Out 3, Wake Up Dead Man. Holy cow. Well done. And I was wondering if you was going to mess things up for that one, but I mean, y'all did all right. Good job. Nikita?
Yeah, Knives Out was really good. I enjoyed it. This one, make sure you have a weekend, or if you're working, I'll be working, and I'm watching these shows. This is one that actually made me turn away from the computer and go, what the bananas? It's called Had I Not Seen the Sun. It's two seasons. And it's the story of a 25-year-old young man who turns himself in as a serial killer. Now this, I'm just going to tell you, I'm not going to tell you anything major about it because I want you to watch it. No one said anything to me about this movie. And I'm watching this movie and I'm like, how come nobody told me about this movie? Now, everybody that knows me knows I like, you know, Asian cinema. I really do. And I watch it all. I like British, Asian, African, world. I like the world because I live in the world and I've been around the world. So I love the world. And I love to see, when I lived in Italy, I used to watch all these movies and stuff and, you know, it was interesting. And so I like what's coming out of these countries right now. And this movie, if you've ever seen Sybil, you know, think of Sybil and the serial killer. Cause literally that's what that is. It's about someone, it's about heavy, heavy trauma. They don't shy away from that. And what happens when you fail to protect someone you love? And it's really when your life is not even that good, but you know, it's, you sacrifice. There were a lot of sacrifices in this movie. Had I not seen the sun, it was beautiful. I'm getting ready to start crying. It was just amazing. It was sad. It was happy, but it was a lot. It was pretty amazing. So had I not seen the sun, check it out. I think you'll love it. Now let's talk about really quickly here. Play goes to Yote this year. It got robbed at the Game Awards. So I'm going to say about it. It's a brilliant game. It's a beautiful game. Much like Assassin's Creed, but two different types of games. You know, people think about Wukong. People think about, you know, the name escapes me.
Ghost of Tsushima?
Yes, thank you. Ghost of Tsushima. And it was, because this is the Ghost of Yote. So, yes, brilliant, brilliant game. Beautiful, well-made, a great world game. The maps, you know, this is one of those, in order to fill in the maps, you have to go to the places, right? And you're building on it. And it just looks so real. You know, it reminds me of when I first played Horizon, how it occurred to me, as someone who's been gaming for such a long time, the magic of the devs and how they see things, right? In Ghost of Yote, this is a game of skill. Let me tell you something. you've got to learn. I mean, each, you know, thing gets harder and every boss gets harder and harder till the end, right? The storyline is beautiful. The traveling is beautiful because you're traveling. It's world travel. You know, the visuals, the maps, the characters, the weapons, you know, and if you're like me, you have your favorite weapon, but in this one, you had to learn all the weapons. I think it was robbed at the Game Awards. I'm not going to say any more on it because I didn't even remark about it on social media because I was so disgusted. It's almost like you can win every award, but you don't win the Game of the Year. You're literally saying that this is a overall well-rounded, it's like the movies. This is an overall, hits every single target market, but you're not the Game of the Year. That is ludicrous. And I think they're asking us to swallow a lot. But let me say, I appreciate the work the devs put into that game and the players who loved it. Bravo to you because I thought it was a masterful game. And I've played a lot of games. I've been playing for a long time since the beginning of games. And I will tell you, I am impressed with what's coming. I don't like the price of these things, but I'm impressed at what the developers are putting out. And I think they deserve more respect than that. I think if you're going to have an award, then you have to be honest. I played Clair Obscur, but I'm not going to talk about it because there apparently a lot of people liked it. But if you want your game to win and there's an opportunity for you to vote, then you vote. You know, simple as that. I always say these things. You cannot complain if you won't participate in the system that's there. Now, is there, you know, probably a coordinated effort to not allow some? Yes, because that's a society we live in. But if you really enjoy something, let them know you really enjoy it or they're going to stop making it. And that I've seen over my time where they stop making beautiful things. And I like beautiful things. And that's why I participate. And, you know, in gaming, in a world that can be so ugly, you want to have more beautiful things. And some people might find that funny because there's a lot of murder in this game. It's a lot of killing in this game. But it is well done. It is art. It is beautiful. Jewel?
I agree. I agree. I play the game. It was visually, aesthetically pleasing. It was stunning. It was an art form. You can play it in cinematic, monochromatic, black and white form if you want. They cover every base in terms of ability and disability accessibility. That was amazing to see. And when I play, I play to compete with myself. Okay, let me just be real. And I've been playing for a very, 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 very long time. Very long time. And I'm going to say that when I play and I want to compete with a player, I'm competing with myself. And so when I start playing, I usually play at a higher difficulty level. Now, these games now, as they continue, I started seeing over the years that difficulty level was just, let me see just how hard and difficult I can make it. You get so frustrated, you want to pick up your console or the thing you have it, throw it across the room, you're like, forget it! This sucks! I'm going to say this game was not that. This game was so difficult, so beautiful, and so challenging without making it incapable of being able to beat yourself, your own coordination, your own difficulty, your own ability or inability. You had to think it through, take your time, breathe, figure it out, and get it done. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed every aspect of it. There was never a moment where I was like, oh, I don't want to play this anymore. Never. I never felt that. I finished it. I enjoyed it. And I waited to see who's going to get awards. And I couldn't believe that you can be nominated for almost everything, but not Game of the Year. And then it hits me real funny. And I'm not saying ha, 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 funny, but like something smell funny. That you can't win Game of the Year, but you win in Blog Game of the Year. Like, what? What? Every other aspect of Game of the Years from other areas knows exactly what's what and gives this game Game of the Year. But somehow, I don't know. For me, the math ain't mathing. It's not working. And I loved it. And y'all that couldn't figure it out, I don't know. They got easier levels. You know, you don't have to go lethal the whole time. You could have downgraded a little bit. I'm just saying. Maybe that was your problem. I don't know. It was gorgeous. It was beautiful. The music was amazing. I took a lot of screenshots. Every detail was just brilliant. How you had to, you're right, you had to learn every weapon. You had to master all things, and yet you could still pick the method in which you enjoyed doing it. The story was phenomenal. It was great. I loved it. And if you look this up, please look it up. The people in Japan that game literally spoke out and said that there has never been historically ever until now a more historically accurate map of the region that they were playing in. And they were just so astonished that the devs took the time to respect their historical method of the way things play out, because it's like you said, it's very much like Assassin's Creed where it goes through historically in time. So you have the correct art form, you have the correct weaponry use at the time, you have the correct rivalry within the different dynamics of population that's going through. And they said it was the most accurate. For me, that's like one of the highest forms of kudos, because if you're representing my culture and my history and my stuff, and I've never seen it represented so accurately, I'm going to speak on that and say, oh my God, thank you so much. You see us, you see what we, and then you respected it enough not to change it for game purposes. I thought it was phenomenal. For me, it won Game of the Year, but I don't matter. So, you know, it was great.
It was fabulous. And I am always impressed at the work that the developers do. You look, they take time. People are so critical of stuff that they don't do themselves. I can't stand that. I can't stand people that do stuff like that, that have a whole lot to say about what someone else does that they couldn't do at all. That they couldn't do it. You know, I tend to not be that person. I don't believe in being critical that way because I know my strengths and I know my weaknesses. And I believe in giving proper accolades for work well done. Work well done on Ghost of Yote. And if you don't want things like the Game Awards, which could have been a beautiful thing, to turn into a corporate problem, you know, then you got to speak out. And instead of spending all of your time, you know, talking about bias and things, talk about, you like gaming, play the game. As a woman, I've been playing games for a long time, you know, from the Commodore 64 to my 8088, games for a long time. Okay. And, you know, never once, and it's just like in life, I don't spend my time worried about is because this is a man or because this is a white person or because did I like it? Did it make me laugh? Did it make me cry? Did it make me scared? Was it hard? Was it fun? Did it challenge me? Those are normal things. Those are normal behaviors. All of this other stuff is minutia, and it takes away from the beauty of the sport of game. It takes away from the beauty of cinema. It takes away from the beauty of television. All of these things we would not have without imagination, creativity of the directors, the actors, the actresses, the developers, the writers, the studio heads, no money, people. But you, the people watching it, you know, I mean, it used to be we could all just go to the movies and enjoy the movies, you know, for movie's sake. And if we didn't want to watch the movie, we don't watch the movie. You don't pay your $1.50 for the movie, which is now $36, which is another problem in and of itself. You go and you watch what you want to watch down the street. If you're not into the Warriors, you go watch Heidi. You know what I mean? If you don't want to play Ghost of Yote, you play something on, I don't know, Nintendo, something that's on Nintendo. You play Roblox, or you play God of War, or you play NBA 2K, or you play something like that. And I like God of War. I do not play NBA 2K, but do you ever hear me talk bad about NBA 2K? I do not play, you know, Call of Duty, but do you ever hear me complaining about Call of Duty? No, because there are games for people who like those games. I play Splinter Cell. I play Assassin's Creed. I play everything almost, you know, Final Fantasy. There are games I do not enjoy for reasons that are mine, but I don't want to take that joy from someone else. And people don't have to like what I like. It is the weirdest thing to be a mature adult and you think that people have to like what you like. And the reason Ghost of Yote got so much flack, because it was men talking about they didn't want to play as a woman. What kind of clown nonsense is that? It's a game. It doesn't make you a woman. That's your insecurity. Don't play the game then. There are plenty of games for you out there. And don't take the joy from someone else. That game was brilliant. And she was as strong as any other male character I've played. And I played a lot of male characters. You know? If I didn't play video games because I had to play a male character, what kind of wussy would I be? Weak-minded individual that, you know, doesn't understand the parameters of gaming, which is a skill set, by the way, a mental skill set. It's dexterity, clarity, you know, everything. Gaming is a physical thing as well as a mental thing. And it's about accuracy and acuity and strength and all of those things and problem solving. And you all tried to tank a game because you played as a woman in Horizon Zero Dawn. I just get tired of this nonsense. You know, don't like the game, don't buy the game. But the unit sold shows something different. If you don't like the book, don't buy the book. But don't take away someone's ability to make money. And doing the stuff that y'all are doing is killing the devs out there trying to make a living doing something they love. Killing the actors and actresses out there trying to make a living doing something they love. Killing the authors that all they dream of is putting the words in their brain on paper to have someone read it. Stop trying to destroy other people's dreams because you haven't done anything. Because that's what that's tantamount to. That's where your hate comes from. You know? So in this rewind, we talk about stuff that we like and that we watched. And the last thing are the books that we read. We're doing Kamala Harris right now. And I read James Baldwin, No Name in the Streets. I'm a huge fan of James Baldwin. You know, a lot of black writers during the Renaissance era. And I've always followed James Baldwin. I've read all of his books. I just wanted to reread this one to get a feeling of where we're at right now. And it speaks to me. And if you haven't read it, go ahead, pick it up. I bought it at Barnes & Noble's. James Baldwin, you know, No Name in the Street. And Jewel, before we wrap up, what do you think? And we're doing, and please listen to us. We're listen, check out our podcast. We're doing, don't listen to us. No, check out our podcast. We're doing Kamala Harris. We're on the third session. So, Jewel?
Yes, the books. Games. I also played Hell Is Us. It came out this year. It's pretty, it's an interesting new method of gaming. If you haven't played it, check it out. It's very based on horror, macabre things. So you're warned there are serious things that it's about. So just so you know. Books. I, again, read VP Harris, Kamala Harris's 107 Days. We are going, through it. We just wrapped up our last session. It is phenomenal so far. And like I said, as I said earlier, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, if you haven't picked it up, it is most certainly a page turner. And if you want to know why this new genre of horror and where this entire story of the mad scientists and their creation came about, she is owed her respect and reward. It was amazing. And for it to be written in 1818 and still hit today and still be the motivation and the muse for so many other movies and things created is just what an impact. What an impact. Very, great. I love Mary Shelley. And I'm going to say Rob Reiner passed. And he did my favorite movie ever, a screenplay, Princess Bride. And it's based on a book. If you haven't read the book and if you haven't seen the movie, please do. They're both spectacular, funny, hilarious, amazing. It really is a great show. There's pirates, there's fighting, there's romance, and the book is even better. I love both. Check it out. Nikita.
Thanks, Jules. So we're going to wrap it up. Rewind, because a lot happened in 2025. Watch a lot. There's probably a lot more movies that we haven't talked about, but these are the ones that we really enjoyed. Check them out. You know, let us know what you think. Also, check out our podcast. You know, and Blurred's Word, the BBOL show, Blurred's Word with Nikita and Jewel on everywhere you get your podcast, except for the other places where you probably know we're not at. All right. So, cause capitalism. So, you know, we will see you next week at 12 o'clock Eastern time on Saturday as we do the BBOL show, and we will be seeing you in the new year. So stay strong, stay safe. Be fresh for the new year. Be blessed. Jewel?
Definitely. Stay safe. Drink if you're drinking. Merry Christmas. You know, for a lot of us, Christmas isn't over until the Epiphany, the Tree King's Day. So if you're still celebrating, please be safe. If you drink, drink if you're drinking, but don't drive if you're drinking. Have a great time. Be safe and see you next year.
Right. All that, you know, January 1st, start new, you know. Don't start blue, just start new. All right, peace, ciao.
Bye.